you just see MJ come running down the hall?
Yes. Very spry.
Come on in.
Very spry.
You're up next.
This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Thank you so much for tuning in. Allison Stewart, Luke Burbank here for you. Now it's time for the BPP's equivalent of the old senior yearbook. Who got voted most likely to get a laugh? Who got voted best hair? Most likely to end up drunk in a gutter in Queens? I'm not going to tell you which staffer that was. Also, most likely to end up on the BPP's round of the best of the web, which we call the most.
All right, MJ. It was good hustle down the hall.
I mean, so. I was totally engrossed in the new Wu-Tang CD. Sorry, guys.
Sure. It's happened to me before.
So my most comes from dig.com, where you can find a link to a pill for just $425 that can make your poop glitter gold. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. It's real.
And did they give you an explanation for why one would spend $425 to do such a thing?
Well, if you have a spare $425... and, you know, you're just looking for a little excitement in the bathroom. This might be the gift for your special loved one.
I don't want to go too far down this road, but was there a photo on the story and dig? I mean,
only of the capsules, which are so pretty because they're full of gold glitter. But there is no proof yet that your poop will actually look like gold.
This sounds like a job for Robert Krulwich. I think we need some experimentation here.
Right. Wow. So wait a second.
I thought we were going down this road.
They don't even know if it's going to work.
Hold on.
They tried it, but there's no photographic evidence to prove that it comes out glittering like gold.
They say it works, though.
They say it works.
All right. I'm gonna just trust them on that.
Okay.
All right, Dan Pashman.
Hey, guys. We get most emailed here from today's New York Times science section. An ancient medicine, enjoy in moderation. All about humans' long and proud history with alcoholic beverages. Great quote here from a professor at University of Pennsylvania. As far back as we can look, humans have had a love affair with fermented beverages. This guy is an archaeological chemist at UPenn, which basically means he's been studying the history of human beings finding ways to get messed up.
Okay.
And he says, but it's not just humans. From fruit flies to elephants, if you give them a source of alcohol and sugar, they love it. And it's all about some of the different things over time that have made human beings drawn to alcoholic beverages, not just the feeling that some people may enjoy from drinking them, but also certain possibly evolutionary advantages to drinking alcoholic beverages. For instance, most fermented drinks need to be boiled at some point, which will kill off bacteria, thus living off alcoholic beverages in times of cholera or dysentery, other types of waterborne illnesses. You could actually be safer drinking alcoholic beverages, and then if those people survive while others die off, people with a penchant for drinking are likely to reproduce. And as we all know, a penchant for alcohol can be inherited. And so over time, human beings may have actually evolved a taste for fermented beverages. And it goes way back. There are chemical traces inside 9,000-year-old pottery from northern China that indicates that there was a wine drink made from rice, grapes, hawthorn, and honey.
And woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
I know that we're well past, you know, the time of cholera and these things, but I'm not taking any chances. It's about survival, people.
Right.
Into the control room, editor Tricia McKinney, who's a little bit under the weather, but a trooper.
Yes, yes. So please forgive the huskiness of my voice. I'm not trying to, you know.
I find it sultry.
Oh, great. Well, thanks.
Okay, Brenda Vaccaro, hit us.
All right. So I have an article that's both the most emailed and most viewed at the Chicago Tribune. And it's not surprising because it's about Ron Paul. And, you know, anything about Ron Paul and the internet, it just spikes way up there. So this is just a profile of two people in Manchester, New Hampshire who are behind some of the big fundraising effort and some of the get out the vote effort in the New Hampshire primary. The guy Trevor Lyman, he's 37. He's the guy who spearheaded that online one-day fundraising movement that netted, you know, more than $4 million in 24 hours for Ron
Paul. And is launching the blimp, I think.
Yeah, it also talks about the blimp. Apparently, he and this other guy, a 29-year-old guy named Vijay Boyapati, are roommates up in Manchester, New Hampshire. This other guy left his job at Google to become a full-time volunteer. They're trying to get 1,000 out-of-state Ron Paul supporters to New Hampshire for the primary. They're going to put them in. They're renting houses. They've got like 20 houses across the state where these people are all going to be. And I think maybe the writer of this article may have coined a new term called wiki painting to kind of describe all the internet efforts behind Ron Paul. So I just think it's, you know, it's just a fascinating phenomenon.
Thank you, Rita Cosby.
For that.
It's fine for you. I'm so glad
I've got
you
inside
that.
Information about.
My sources tell me that this is the most emailed and most viewed, and that's as far as I'll go.
Thank you, Trish, very much.
Mine is from one of Google's most searched terms. It's Dana Perino. And if you're thinking, okay, the name sounds familiar, she's the White House press secretary. She took over for Tony Snow when he was ill. She became the full time press secretary in the fall. Well, she's 35 years old. She was born in 1972, and, you know, she is a pretty, you know, she's very beautiful, and she is a fairly easygoing gal. She was on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me over the weekend playing the Not My Job game, which, you know, the point of it is to ask people questions that they don't know a lot about. Apparently, her answers not to the reindeer questions they asked her are getting her in trouble. She admitted that she didn't know what the Cuban Missile Crisis was.
Ooh. Wow.
And now the blogs have gone bananas with the fact the White House press secretary wasn't sure what the Cuban Missile Crisis was when she was asked about it. Let's listen to her answer from NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
And so I got asked about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I was panicked a bit because I really know about nothing about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
It
had to do with Cuba and missiles.
Yes, it had to do. It did, in fact, have to do with Cuba and missiles, Dana.
Yeah, so I'll have to get back to you on that.
Really? I have to go Google this.
It's a tropical drink. You should try it on spring break.
Well, it is true.
Well, I came home and I asked my husband.
Yeah.
I said, "Wasn't that like the Bay of Pigs thing?" And he said, "Oh, Dana."
Thing.
There you go.
Pig's thing.
Although she did have one of the greatest lines ever. She said that when she and her husband get in fights, sometimes he'll say, "Don't use your White House voice with me."
You know, I'm conflicted about us even covering that Dana Perino thing because as journalists and as people that do a show, the thing that's the bane of our existence is people like Dana Perino coming on and being super boring, not letting their hair down. And then when they do, we all have to kind of make fun of them. I want more of those Dana Perino moments. I want more of these people to admit that they have no clue what's going on.
Well, in the big picture, if you heard the whole thing, she's actually pretty charming on the show. Uh-huh. It's just this one thing. It is sort of an unfortunate thing not to know about, you have to admit.
Yeah,
Is that it?
That is the most. You can find these stories and other. My voice just cracked. I mean, seriously, I'm 31 years old. It's time for this to end, biology. You can find these stories and others on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.
My co-host, Peter Brady.
Seriously.